This is CliffCentral.com.
Okay, a few things that we need to talk about in the news. Sia knows what ministers get. Oh, this is exciting. You know, we've got all these cabinet ministers, and Cyril says he's trimmed it down, but he hasn't really. It's only a few less. And we want to know what these guys get as part of their deal.
Mm.
Why it's so nice to be a minister. It's good to be the king.
As of June of 2019, there's an updated ministerial handbook.
Oh, yeah?
Which stipulates some of the perks of being a minister in South Africa. Do you want to run through some of those?
And they've actually given this to us? Now we can look into it?
It's updated now. So we can see and approve. Well, too late to approve yay or nay. They're now just telling us.
Let's hear it.
What ministers are entitled to in South Africa. So some of the costs in this revised guide for ministers include a vehicle. So the cost of the vehicle, which includes, by the way, security upgrades, will be determined by the minister responsible for finance. In this case, we know that it's Mr. Dintombweni. But departments may only replace a motor vehicle, they say, purchased for member if the vehicle has reached 120,000 kilometers or 5 years, whichever comes first, or if the vehicle experiences some serious mechanical issues. But any additional maintenance such as tires or fuel or oil and repairs will be done through a contract administered by the department. So this means all in all, we're paying for
cars. But they talk about these security upgrades. So are these armored cars? This is what I'd like to know. Are they armored? Do they have
to define it very specifically?
Yeah. Do they have special modifications?
Windows and blades that come out the sides.
Right, because that stuff costs money.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real expense comes in. Okay, so they get a vehicle. What else?
Yes, that we pay for. No. Sticking with cars and traveling in greater sense, well, national members and their spouses are jointly entitled to 30 single domestic business class flights every single year.
Domestic, now, 30 of them, okay.
This is unclear to me whether it is 30 for the minister and 30 for the spouse.
It's 4 a month.
Or it's 30 for the couple and they see who uses what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So no daily subsistence or travel allowance is payable to a member or member's spouse or minor children. But ministers and deputy ministers may be accompanied by their spouse, or they also stipulate an adult family member instead for no more than 2 international trips per financial year. So that's the cap.
Okay.
2 international trips, and that's it. Otherwise, the state isn't paying for that. But they also stipulate that the trip undertaken is no longer than 3 days. And the minister and deputy minister is invited to attend official duties accompanied by a spouse or adult family member.
Sorry, so at least it's 2.5 per month. My maths is horrible.
Oh, for the flights, they mean.
Yeah.
So at least the handbook also says that a minister can't just willy-nilly take anyone on a trip. So if you take someone on a trip, they have to be accompanying you to that event, that meeting. There has to be reason as to why they're coming with you.
It's not just your buddy who wants a lift to Durban.
But we see how the handbook says one thing and what we see in reality is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not naming and shaming anyone, but look at some spouses who on Instagram will go on with a minister to New York, but they're busy shopping until they drop. When it comes to housing, the handbook stipulates that members may, for official purposes, occupy state-owned residence in the seat of office. This is all free of charge.
What are those like?
Well, we know that
it's certainly not an RDP house.
Not at all, because the state also contributes R250,000 to that house for security measures for private residence that is designated to a minister. So that must be nice. The department responsible for public works will be responsible for the costs associated with the provision of water and electricity to official residences. This includes a private residence designated as an official residence as well. So this is interesting to me as I was squizzing over the handbook as well. Rentals for phones, the installation and maintenance of fax. When last did you hear of that? Internet or Wi-Fi and DSTV facilities for official use at these residences as well will also be payable by the relevant department. So I don't know what the parameters of official use are. Maybe they say, well, as a Minister of Transport, I have to keep tabs with the news, and this is why I need DSTV to be able to squiz over the various channels. We have to pay for that in the department overall. So, yeah, that's just some of the main highlights from the updated ministerial handbook. So some travel, some housing, and the cars that we pay for.
What do you think of this, Ben?
It's absolutely outrageous, Gareth. It makes my blood boil. It makes me angry.
Mm-hmm.
I hate these people. I just hate them. They are such thieves. They are such parasites.
So would you say that ministers deserve none of this?
None of it.
None.
They must pay for it. They must pay for it by doing something. It's just entitlement that is finest.
Well, to me, it's just all good and well that this is laid down on paper, but we know the execution of it isn't what the book lays out, and there are many loopholes around it.
But see, can you imagine when this is drawn up over a bottle of Johnny Extravaganza blue green, whatever you want to call it, with cream soda on top, sitting around a table going, what can we have for free and what can we steal and what can we, like, where do they measure this? It's like, okay, so this is our skill set, this is what we do, this, who can we balance this against in someone else? Like, if I've got to cost a company to a business, right, I look at my skill set, I look at what's competitive and where I've been, my education, my experience, my execution abilities. They don't measure any of that. It's like a Reggie's Toy Rush back in the day. Okay, I want DSTV, I want domestic travel, I want.
Yeah.
Ben does not like this.
Yeah, well,
I hate these people so much. They're the scourge of this country. They're such pieces of shit. There's no other way to say it. I'm sorry I'm so angry about this, but it's so annoying.
My fault for opening the sluice gates. I said, so Ben, what do you think? I had no idea.
Didn't see that coming.
The DA has also spoken out about this revised handbook. They say the handbook in its current form is nothing more than a blank check for ministers to spend the people's money on their private affairs.
Spot on.
You know, President Ramaphosa previously committed to a revised handbook that would cut lavish ministerial expenditure. However, this has turned out to be just another broken promise.
What are they spending what they earn on? If they're not paying for a house and a car and travel and another house and travel for their spouse.
Those horrible outfits they wore to the opening of Parliament.
Yeah,
we pay for domestic services.
You see.
Hitmen, political favors. whatever keeps them in that job, Leanne, they will pay for.
All right. I forgot to mention that even if they were to justify enough the fact that they need the likes of DSTV, they're actually allowed DSTV at 3 houses per minister. I don't know what justification would have to kick in for something like that, but yeah.
All right. Well, there we go.
All of these things make it viable for them to have side chicks because they've got no abilities, probably socially, but then they've got DSTV for 3 houses. So now, like, who would you rather date? Someone with a little bit of charm but no money, or like Jabba the Hutt who's got 3 DSTVs per house kind of thing? All they're doing is they're trying to make themselves more approachable and attractive and just valuable to society, but they're just cretins.
All right. Well, there's other stuff in the news too, Ben, so don't use up all your energy on this one.
Yeah, think about being in Zimbabwe.
It's just nonsensical, Gareth. It doesn't make any sense. It's just...
Yes, everybody hold back a little. Let's let Ben just completely vent and then everything will get better.
Go ahead, Ben.
I'm done because it's a ventless topic because these pricks will just carry on stealing. It's because they have made the law. It's like, hi, we've made a law. We can
scratched
steal.
An itch with Ben. Mm-hmm.
We can just steal all this stuff.
Just let him have it.
What do you do? I steal. It's fine. I'm a politician. I steal.
The big wheels of injustice keep on turning like the wheels on your golf pram.
Ow!
Let's talk about Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe. If you are a Zimbabwean and you want a passport, it's not going to happen.
What do you mean?
Zimbabwe does not have funds to import the ink and paper needed for these documents.
Oh, no.
They've said come back in 2021.
Oh, no.
They are printing between 5 and 10 passports a day, and these documents are reserved for diplomats or the few special cases approved by the Ministers of Home Affairs.
Yeah, same thing. Grace Mugabe's probably got 4 passports. She probably updates her passport because she doesn't like her picture like in 6 months' time.
I thought I'd change the subject, but
you haven't. You just got him going. All right, so you cannot get a passport if you're in there. There's a backlog
of 300,000 applications.
You see, now this is keeping people prisoner.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yep. You're basically in prison.
Because a lot of people want to move. It's not like people aren't applying for passports at the moment.
And people want to know, like, what's the cost of incompetence and the failed state? This is the cost of the failed state, is that ultimately you'll end up imprisoned within the borders of your country with no hope of being able to get in or out.
Mm.
It's terrible.
So just to look at what inflation's like there at the moment, it's last month reached almost 100%. That's the second highest in the world after Venezuela.
Sure.
So obviously basic goods, commodities, all of these have gone up by close to 10 times just since last year.
Wow. All
right. Imagine paying 10 times more for bread or eggs.
Yeah, it's just crazy. All you want to do is get out and then you can't even leave because they don't have ink and paper to print passports. What an absolute failure.
And you know, the problem as well is that there are a lot of people who are trying to leave the country for medical attention.
Yeah.
And of course, because the health sector's collapsed there. The hospitals don't have medicines or medical equipment.
It goes back to last week. You were having a conversation with Elson from Zambia. Mm-hmm. He lives from Zambia because Zimbabwe's too much of a shithole.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the fact that, you know, but you got to love your country. No.
No, you don't.
What's that love?
Yeah.
It's a complete and utter failed shithole.
Ask what your country can do for you.
Can't print your passport. Well, I mean, this is crazy because they've just reintroduced the Zim dollar, but they... I mean, how are they going to print that? They're going to need ink and paper for that too. It's a disaster. All right, what else is going on? Give me some ray of hope. I mean, I tried to with that great story about the stock markets going up, but there must be more.
It was a good story there, Gareth. I like that.
Thank you, Ben.
It's a very good story.
Good, good, good.
Would you swim in an infinity pool?
Yes.
On top of a 55-story building?
Sure, I would.
What?
Yeah, it's quite it's an adrenaline junkie thing.
Is this the one that they've built in London now?
They're going to.
Oh, yeah.
Still proposed.
Okay, so it's right at the top of the building. How do you get into it?
That was my question.
Okay. It takes up the whole floor.
So because it's officially the world's first 360-degree swimming pool, mm-hmm. view swimming pool, they couldn't construct any ladders or anything on the outside or lifts or things like that.
So let me just explain to people who can't see the picture. Imagine a tower. Your tower with four sides, right? Goes all the way up to the top. And then the top floor is the infinity pool. There's nothing in the pool. The walls around the pool are glass. So you've got a 360-degree view. But how do you get in?
And also...
Please tell me you have an answer because I've been thinking about this.
No, I do have an answer.
Driving me crazy.
And also, what's even more perplexing is if you look at another image of it. So people in the building can look up a few floors where there's nothingness into the swimming pool, and people in the pool can look down into the building. So you can essentially see the sky or airplanes flying over.
We were not programmed for these visuals in our head. I think people are going to freak out completely.
How do you get in?
How do they get in? It's a lift.
Yeah.
Okay.
From what? The next door building?
Like it says, it's something out of a spy movie.
Okay.
So it's based on the design of a submarine door.
Okay.
A rotating spiral staircase rises from the floor of the pool to create a portal.
Oh my
God. One more time.
Wow, hang on a second.
It's called an
because you'd need an airlock, right? Otherwise the pool will empty every time.
Mm.
That's it. And also they don't want water splashing over into the streets of London type thing.
No, exactly.
That high you wouldn't really get any water at the bottom because it'll just
It would obviously evaporate.
Well, it would, by the time it hits the bottom, it'll have separated into
drops. No, I'll notice because it's always raining there anyway.
Yeah. Wow. This is amazing.
It's really all ecologically clever as well. So waste energy from the building's air conditioning system will be used to reheat the pool.
Sure.
Yeah, because that pool's got to be quite warm.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Do we know anything about this tower? Is it a residential tower?
It's a hotel.
It's a hotel.
Mm.
Oh, no. I think it's just starting issues.
I think I'm all for this. I don't know. Look, I've got to try it to know for sure, but it sounds like a good idea.
For safety, I don't think it's a good idea.
I just don't like the way there's no way to put your drink.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, why do you want a drink up there?
It's one of these snooty places
there
that say no glass in the pool. I hate those places.
Mm.
But you can't even get into it with stuff like that because you'll have to get into the airlock with your just your swimming costume on. You can't even take a towel.
You can't even take your phone.
No, nothing.
No one will want to go, because if you can't Instagram it, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point?
They're going to have to fly drones as you go up to take a photo of you and then send it back to you.
Right.
Oh, that's quite a costly Instagram.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
but that's the world we live in,
yeah. Yeah, that's how you get ahead. All right, very good. Well, there's something interesting.
That'll start... It's been called Infinity London,
oh, so you
and
mean
it'll
it's
start
already?
In 2020,
oh,
next
no.
year.
I was going to go see it on Thursday.
Go for a dip. No, yeah. Not yet.
Damn, mm-mm. What a waste.
I just can't imagine looking over that side and see the drop.
It's not for me. It's just not for me.
Oh, yeah, people are going to pee their pants.
Then you're on holiday pool. With some stupid people who think it's funny to try and scare you off.
Or to create mm-mm. waves so that you get flung out.
Let's try it before you nail it. Thank you. Before you say how horrible it is.
No, yeah, I don't have to try to see it. To see how horrible it is.
Have you guys ever heard of a merit?
A merit?
Ooh, merit.
Is that a carrot with something wrong with it?
So it's very much a carrot to the naked eye, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, Arby's, okay, they've been trolling vegans. Because a merit is a carrot made out of meat.
Wow.
So if you want to see something funny today, Google a merit.
So it's like a Vienna.
It's like a basically, yeah, it's like a Vienna
processed
sausage.
Meat thing.
That's been made into what looks essentially like a carrot.
And it's been colored, obviously.
Yeah, it's been colored. Now, we've often heard these things about vegans being trolled by people like meat eaters.
Yeah.
So like there'll be vegan protesters at a restaurant and a guy will just be taking an elk and dissecting it in front of him. We've seen these things, but now Arby's has created the merit.
It's a horrible thing,
and that's
Ben.
A big chair. It's dreadful.
I was in a restaurant the other day, and I ordered a burger without the bun, with the mushroom on top and the bottom, just because I enjoy it. I mean, I maybe would have sloshed it down with some chips as well. It's not a carb-free thing or anything. I just enjoy the taste of it. And someone picked up on that and said, if you're coming to a Braai, I'll make you halloumi patties. And I said, no, it's not that I'm vegetarian or vegan or anything like that.
You're just avoiding the carbs.
No, not even that. Oh, I just like the taste of it.
You did say that, yeah.
So, yeah, they could. I would eat a merit very happily.
You probably would.
I would eat a merit. Not a chance.
No, well, I don't really eat Viennas anyway. A merit?
Oh, the stuff they put in Vienna's, man.
Yeah, processed yeah, then, meat.
Look, it's a pretty cool thing to trot out at a party. And they go, oh, I'll have a carrot. Ugh.
No, imagine holding it. Does it sag
wobbly.
A bit?
It's a bit wobbly, yeah. Like a Vienna.
Like, it'd be pretty cool as like an advertising campaign to have like a rabbit eating a merit. And it's like, what's up, vegans?
Why do we feel like being cruel?
Yeah, that's it. Do. I'm like, why do you feel like you want to troll people who don't eat meat so much that you think of this?
No, it's the ones who are smug about it. It's those ones.
The smug vegans.
Yes.
All right.
Smegans.
Smegegans.
All right, what else is going on?
Well, if you do want to look at just the life of the rich and famous.
Well, you've already told us about the ministers here, but what else do you have?
Well, Steven Spielberg, very rightfully so, has earned all of his money and he's well into...
Yeah, he's made
stories.
He bought
his own house. He stories bought his own car.
Stories that have come to life for our generation. Things like E.T. Steven Spielberg deserves whatever he's got.
Jaws, which made $60 million U.S. dollars back in that day in the first month.
And ruined all the fun for great whites.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, ruined the fun for swimming in that summer.
What do you mean? Oh.
Jaws was released in the summer to create like this big stir around people going to the beach.
Right.
So then there's this killer shark. And it was
that
a real thing.
Song?
This is so weird because...
Still has a bit of a chill.
I was going to talk about was a shark death. Sorry about that.
No.
You know that island, you've seen it on Instagram, where you can swim with pigs?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, that island, very cute looking.
Rose Island.
Island of pigs.
A young girl has been killed there in front of her parents by a trio of tiger sharks.
Oh, what a bunch of dogs.
Oh, man.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened to the pigs?
Well, I don't know why they didn't go for the pigs, rather. They taste like much better.
Poorly sighted child saying, I'm going to go swim with the pigs, pointing at a tiger shark.
And she's as skinny as a bean. I mean, you know.
So it was for sport, not nutrition. Then.
Exactly. See? the evilness lurks beneath the waters.
To go back to Spielberg. Yeah. So what's he doing with his money? The Annenuit, shark attacks, frightening small children.
It really did just put a pause on me now. Oh, no. Well,
do go on.
Do you want to look at just the fabulous life that Steven Spielberg lives?
Sure.
He has a bunch of kids who are actually also very closely involved in acting and his businesses as well.
Of course, they're glomming off of him. Sure.
No, it's refreshing to hear that two of his daughters who are actresses have actually changed their last names as they pursued their careers because they didn't want to be followed by their father's legacy and they really wanted to make their own way and not off his back. So I think that's actually
All right. Gary Player's kids had that issue. They stuck with the player and none of them amounted to anything.
Oh, okay. Well, he has tons of properties the world over. He has a home that he's kept since the late 1990s. And it's quite a very exclusive neighborhood to be in. Jay-Z and Beyonce live there as well. It's just very, very awesome. He also and this is the property in Malibu that just is worth a cool 92 million rands.
Okay.
They sold it a couple of years ago back in 2015 for 367 million rands. But
it's
still
a good investment. Look at the returns.
He still has some great real estate to choose from. He has a vacation home in what is called Georgica Pond, which is a coveted area in the Hamptons.
Okay.
And the Hamptons neighbors includes many, many billionaires. So he fits right in right there. He also is very close to the Clintons. Bill and Hillary Clinton also own a home in the Hamptons very close to him. He has tons of property in New York City, including at one point he owned a condo in Tribeca. Huh. And that was just on the same street as Taylor Swift, Orlando Bloom, and Peter Jackson. I mean, you know, if he ever runs out of sugar, he knows who to call there. But right now, in these times,
he's quite a good property investor by the sound of things.
Well, investor in general.
Sure.
Now he loves spending a lot of time on the Seven Seas. That's his yacht that he bought back in 2015. It's worth 2.6 billion rands.
So it's not like the little ones that you draw in pictures. A sail and a boat.
Highly doubt it. 282-foot vessel. And he's been spotted in Italy and Shanghai and in Hawaii on it. I think it's just amazing. But when he is in Los Angeles, which is his home base, he's usually just seen in a very modest Tesla Model S. But it's just casual life of Steven Spielberg.
Bill and Hillary Clinton stayed at Spielberg's house on Georgica Pond. Mm-hmm. And they called it the Summer White House for, I think it was the years between 1998 and 1999. Mm. And apparently, there was a big rumor that the Secret Service actually drained that whole pond to look for submarines while the Clintons were staying there.
Wow. Because
security costs go right up and keeping the president safe is so important. So to go back to the thing that got Ben all upset, governments love wasting money on stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Checking out there. Imagine draining the whole pond.
Because submarines can't be picked up with...
Because someone wanted to, get a bikini shot of Crooked Hillary.
Yeah. Those sought after things that people can't get enough of.
As someone who will own being an overthinker and paranoid, when it comes to security, I don't think you can ever spend enough.
Yeah, a pond. How big is this pond?
Oh, no, it's big. It's basically a lake. I mean, they call it a pond because Long Island has got this strip of coastline, and then inside of that, there are these lagoons, which are called ponds. And Georgica Pond is one of the most famous ones there, and it's got houses around it that are owned by Martha Stewart, Calvin Klein. I mean, these are rich people. They all live very nice lives.
A submarine's not a chip packet. You can kind of put a radar or sonar or...
You can find a submarine fairly, especially in a pond.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
I don't care. Drain it all. For my security, yes.
See, this is why Sia should never be voted into government. No. He would take every cent.
No, it won't be government. I'll work very hard for my money, but anything. Scan all the geckos in the area. Scan all the psychopaths. I need psychiatric evaluation done on everyone in a 1 kilometer radius of me.
You don't.
Do you know, Sia, that the more paranoid you are, the more likely these things are to be attracted to you and you have bad things happen to you?
It's like, do you ever realize that the devil's only ever seen by Christians, or like ghosts are only ever seen by huge religious people?
Yeah. If you're expecting the killer to come and get you, guess what?
No. No. I don't want to hear it. That's why the closest people in my life right now are the security guards at my complex. Always got to keep
them. Yeah, because they've got alternative things in the go as well.
Got to always keep them close by.
Ash just sent me a picture of him on top of a building in Bangkok, which has a glass floor hanging over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
314 meters up, 76 floors. Oh, freaky feeling.
That's a knee weakener right there. Yeah. Sweaty palms just thinking about that.
Andre says he agrees with Ben completely. Ministers should just get a salary and should manage like the rest of us. They shouldn't be treated like children. And Dumelo from Potchefstroom says, I think every guy should know their barber's name. My barber's name is Ali. He is from Pakistan and he's always talking about the children. That's all he talks about. So at least look, I mean, Tumelo's making an effort with his barber. Sia and Ben don't even know their barber's names.
No, I think we're a good relationship. I appreciate what he's saying, but if I had to sit down and be talked and someone talks kids to me for half an hour, living hell. That's what happens when you start getting friendly with people, Gareth.
And friendly people get too comfortable in your life. Then you can't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they ask you about your kids, and then it's like, well, I don't want kids. And they'll be like, well, you should have them. They're really great. Let me show you mine. Wallet picture falls out. And then you're stuck. You're in the chair. You're stuck.
A friend of mine actually posted on social media recently asking for a gynecologist who isn't interested in chatting. She says the last thing that she wants to do, and she listed a bunch of the doctors that she's been around in the city.
I have to go to a different gynecologist every now and then.
See, that's the last thing you want. You're spread-eagled, and now you have to make casual conversation.
It's because of my problem that I've had
Leanne,
to
this is getting
move
personal.
Around. As soon as things get intimate, uh-oh, I start speaking rubbish. Like
what?
The last time I went, you know, spread eagled, and he's using the spatula things, and the shoehorns, those cold metal shoehorns.
Speculum.
Yeah. I looked at the wall, and there were a whole lot of photographs of the babies that he's delivered.
Oh boy!
And I said, "Oh, are these all yours?"
Oh my god!
just stop talking, Ian. Just stop.
Yeah, you, that's your fault, though. That's not the gynecologist's fault.
Exactly. That's why I say it's because of my problem.
Oh, my God.
So you just changed
don't
doctors
go back to him, no.
Based on that.
Horrible.
So, yeah, I've got an appointment with a lady coming up. We'll see.
Good luck to her.
Yeah, just don't say anything. Resist
just
the urge.
Try. So I would actually like that, is to not have to make conversation at all.
Just don't. I don't know why people feel bad about that. You're there for a certain service. You get there, you sit down, they do whatever they have to do, and you get up and leave. I don't like conversations, even with the petrol attendants. God bless you for what you do, and you know, you're there at work, but don't talk to me about sports, and now I have to fake that I know what Bafana was doing
over the
weekend.
You guys are all assuming that these people want to talk to you. Maybe they find you deathly dull as well. I'm not that interested in talking to you. I mean, I think it's great. You know, this Uber that they're bringing out a new feature on the app soon, which they're testing out in certain countries now, where you can say to the driver, look, I'm not a big talker. You don't even have to tell him that. You just have to select.
Indicate it on the app.
Yeah. You select, like, I'm not a big talker, and then The driver's probably going to go, phew, I didn't want to talk to him anyway. You know?
Makes everything
speaking
easier.
Of apps,
yeah.
These are the latest apps that are actually productivity boosting.
All right, I like
so
these.
Instead of Candy Crush, right?
All right, I'm taking to mention you really are.
Time.
You're very into this Candy
I don't know where
Crush.
It came. I haven't played it in years. Life. But a good
all
alternative to that is.
Look at your thumb. It's bruised from playing Candy Crush.
There's an app called Lumosity. It's a brain training program designed by scientists to satiate your gaming needs.
Right.
But it's fun games and puzzles, and it helps stretch your cognitive abilities. There's the TED app, which is, as we know, TED Talks.
Mm-hmm.
It'll you know, obviously provide you with practical knowledge, conversation starters, sure, sparks of inspiration.
Right.
Gutenberg Project. You know, that's a book reading app which allows you to read more than 53,000 books from the comfort of your own phone.
Sure, that's good. No, I like that. Yeah. All right, good.
And the app actually mimics a book-like format, so you can flip pages and things, which is quite nice. There's an app called Daily Page.
All right.
It's all about journaling, which increases mental well-being and physical health. So it gives you it provides a new word prompt every day, and it gives you 24 hours to complete an entry.
You know, I've always had the best intentions in the world of doing keeping a journal. And then at some point in my life, I think I started one, and it lasted like 3 days. And then I just stopped doing it. I couldn't have the discipline to keep doing it.
Why did you want to?
Because sometimes it's good to record these things, and you know,
it's good for mental health.
Yeah, it's a great way to download your thoughts and to process things and to plan goals and to set yourself ambitious tasks and that kind of, it's very healthy.
Mm.
There's no doubt that journaling can be very good for you, but I just couldn't get it right. I couldn't get into it properly.
It didn't work for me.
No.
And I kept a journal for years throughout high school and my first couple of years after high school. And
what did you write in there?
Just every couple of days.
Yeah, but what did you put in?
What I'm going through.
All right.
Who annoyed me? What I'm planning. And it
if we could find those journals, we'd get right into the head of
CSI. I've got some of those as well. And there are points within the journal where I've got really frustrated and dragged my pen through a couple of pages.
Oh my God.
With like swear words, yeah.
No, for me, it just became
you two should burn those things immediately or people will find them and lock you up in a mental hospital.
Yeah, it's sitting in storage at home. But it just became sad when I used to read over them. Like, really, dude, this was your biggest struggle in life? Like,
yeah, but it's great because then you see how you grew from
that. Exactly. Puts things into perspective.
Can't help. My mom today wanted me to help her cook. How dare she? I'm like, no, like, it's ridiculous. So no one actually deserves to see that.
You shouldn't have brought that up now. Yeah. We all think less of you. All right.
I think
just one more cool app. It's called Hey Vina, V-I-N-A.
Yeah.
And it's basically the Tinder of girl boss friendship. So it connects busy women with new friends who share similar interests. You can join like-minded e-communities, read articles about bettering yourself. This is why I brought it up. I would hate to do that.
Hey, Vina.
Yeah. The people who actually want to make more friends.
Ugh.
No thanks.
All right. Well, digital disruption is a clear and present reality, but it doesn't have to be a danger. A recent Forbes Insights survey revealed 51% of executives consider their businesses at risk from digital disruption in the next 5 years. Digital disruption is the most critical and pervasive challenge for leaders around the world, but it's also a profound opportunity. There's no industry or organization that's immune to this. And I'm excited because we are having, we've got access this year in South Africa to the 2019 Davos of Human Capital, which is going to make such an impact. You'll hear from leading minds on how we can transform and thrive in the digital era. And here to chat some more about this is Shamla Chetty. She is part of the team putting it together as the global head of Europe and Africa for Duke Corporate Education. How are you, Shamla?
I'm good, Gert.
Nice to see you.
Yes, absolutely.
Very, very good. So tell me about this Davos of Human Capital. Who's it aimed at?
The Davos of Human Capital is aimed at HR executives, talent managers, as well as CEOs, CIOs. I think everybody that is affected with digitalization. And what does this mean for us as a country?
Is it primarily in the HR environment?
Not really. Although we're calling it the Davos of Human Capital because we talk about people, but it means that CEOs can attend as well as CIOs.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think about technology, everybody is affected with technology. It means children too are affected with technology.
Yes.
It does not necessarily mean that only business. It means communities, societies. It's a large ecosystem that we need to think about, right?
Now, I'm interested because you've got Sophia, who is the first ever. She's been granted citizenship, hasn't she?
Absolutely, at Saudi.
She's the first artificial intelligence that's been given a personal kind of ID.
Absolutely. So we're excited about that one. You know, what is AI is playing a huge role in our economy, mm-hmm. in our society. We call this new electricity. Right.
Of course.
And we're calling, you know, data the new oil. Mm. So we want to hear more about what are the challenges we're going to be faced in our society, as well as the opportunities, because technology can be an enabler, but we need human-centered leadership. We're grappling with a lot of, you know, complexity, challenges, issues. You know, Dr. Hansen can help us unravel some of these challenges.
So this is a guy, David Hansen. He's the he's got a PhD. He's also the CEO of Hansen Robotics, and he invented Sophia the robot.
Yes,
and she's now considered a human, or at least she's been treated like a human. And it's only a 1-day conference, this, right? So it's high impact. You've got 1 day. Define the future of your organization in an era of artificial intelligence and digital disruption. Who else is going to be talking?
So we have BCG. We have a speaker from BCG that's talking about retooling for the future. What will be the future jobs? What are the key challenges that we should be thinking about now? What are the new careers? You know, 21 jobs of the future. We have different organizations sharing some case studies regarding how are they using technology. But we also have organizations saying to us that sharing some case studies, what are the issues that they're grappling with? Because right. It's not easy, you know, talking about digitalization and thinking you can just implement it overnight.
No,
it
absolutely.
Has to be a culture change. It has to be everybody's becoming part of the process. It means that we have a huge unemployment in our country. At the same time, digitalization is happening, technology is happening. You know, how do we become responsible regarding these changes at the same time?
And of course, for young people, this is an opportunity for them to find out more about how the future might look in terms of jobs. There is a Million Young Minds event, which will take place at 10:30 on the 11th. There will be 200 kids in physical attendance, but the team will try to live stream to 1 million kids across the country?
I think.
Tell me how this is going
to
work.
So we're going to live stream this on Facebook to over 1 million kids. We have already contacted multiple schools that have become part of the project. We have two sponsors, MTN and Nedbank, helping us to work with the Young Million Minds. Mm-hmm. And I think here it is, we know that children, you know, already are so digital at the moment, right?
Right.
But if you think about it, we don't know what the new jobs are going to be in the future. There are going to be multiple new jobs.
Oh, yeah.
So these kids need to understand what will their careers look like. So Dr. Hansen's going to talk about careers, the future. What are the opportunities for these young kids as well? You know, going into the future.
And there's going to have to be a lot of adaptability. And I see this happening even in companies now. They're starting to swap out different departments. They're collapsing some. There are new departments jumping up. People are finding new ways to make themselves useful in a number of ways. And being adaptable, being agile, being able to flip things around is essentially what businesses are going to have to learn to do.
Absolutely. They have to think about what are the new skills, you know, problem solving, decision making,
right.
You know, design thinking, creativity, flexibility. They have to work around these things, because if you think you can solve today's problem today, you'll have new problems tomorrow.
Correct.
Right. So you need to actually adapt as you go on.
And we don't know what those solutions might be, but if you're not open to them, nothing good can happen.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, if you think about, you know, our kids knowing what the new jobs are. Do you know what the new jobs are? You know,
not
we may not know.
Not a chance, no.
You know, we're talking about, you know, genetics. We're talking about, you know, ethics officers. We're talking about trust officers.
Yeah.
These are the new jobs.
Just tell me quickly, because you'll be talking too about how technology won't replace the human touch. And I think this is an important discussion, because people think we'll be completely disintermediated by technology. But unless the technology can serve us, it doesn't really serve any purpose.
Absolutely, because one of the things is that technology is going to take over. Mm-hmm. But the human touch is important. You know, thinking about emotions, happiness, you know, can technology do that? No, it can't. No. You know, you have all these likes at Facebook, but you have to have this emotional touch. I think the important thing here is that we need to think about our people as the new asset.
Right.
Right. Human-centered leadership. We need to invest now in our people. and not get, you know, not allow technology to take over. Yes, it is important. It's going to help us. But we need a world that we can gain employment. You know, we can help societies. And the human touch is very important as part of the process.
Tell me about Duke CE, because there are probably a lot of people who don't know what Duke University's job is, what you guys do, what kind of students you churn out, what sort of courses you offer. Tell me a bit about that.
So we, in South Africa, we focused on custom education. We think about it in context, not content. You can actually download anything anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
It's making sure that people can apply their skills back in the workplace, ensuring we use metaphoric experiences, immersive experience, real-time examples to help organizations and individuals change. We don't necessarily only work with organizations. We work with communities as well. Right. We're wanting to make a difference in the larger ecosystem. We were blessed with our rankings this year.
Tell us.
So this year we've been ranked number one in Africa and number two globally by the Financial Times ranking in custom education.
Wow. So what would I be able to come and customize as a set of courses for myself? I mean, what can I come and study there?
Well, I think, you know, you can come on a lot of leadership courses, digitalization, project management. But I think it's more important in context. What are you really looking for?
Yeah.
So what problem are we trying to solve? We're not in the business of a cut and paste. We help organizations to look at some of the challenges they're facing, linked to the strategy, linked to the business, and those types of things we look at solving.
All right, so some of the other people talking are going to be the CEO of Nedbank, Mike Brown. What does it mean to be a human bank in the age of technology?
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, if you think about it, business is going through a lot of transition, but purpose is critical in terms of organization. So Mike Brown is going to share with us why a bank should be purpose-driven versus just talking about technology.
There's a lot of talk around this word purpose. All these businesses are trying to find what their real purpose is. And it's not just to generate profit. It's what they do in society. It's where they make a contribution. It's what they do for their staff, their clients, their suppliers, all of these people, right? And finding that purpose has become a massive thing.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we should actually keep that, you know, part of a bigger agenda, especially right now in terms of, you know, technology, where we are in a country at the moment as well.
Well, Shamna, it sounds very good. And if people want to find out more, they can go along to dukece.com and you can go and register. And maybe there's still some space available at the Davos of Human Capital, which is taking place on the 11th of July.
Yes.
And you can meet Shamna there as well.
Thank you.
Excellent. Very, very good.
Thank you.
Cool. That sounds interesting. Send Sia along.
Yes, I actually will be there.
I'll be there too, yeah.
Myself and Timothy Maurice as well.
Yes.
We'll walk around. We'll learn a lot. Let's see. I'm excited.
Excellent. All right. Very good. That's Shamna Chetty from Duke CE. You can find out more about them if you go online to dukece.com. You can also go and register and find a space for yourself at the Davos of Human Capital. Sounds good, right, Leanne?
Yeah, it does. And it reminds me as well of a story I read recently about how illiteracy is just coming to an end in parts of Afghanistan for women.
With Thank goodness.
A plan that was made in Canada.
Tell me.
So it's just a few cell phone calls away is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
You know, obviously education's under threat in the country. You can't reach rural regions. But they're offering pre-recorded lessons over a phone.
Yeah.
For women in Afghanistan. Because if you look at the typical woman in Afghanistan.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
I can't read, but I get the numbers from Taliban.
You know that for most of her life that they use a woman as a case study. Her name's Fatima Ali. She could only she could only count to 25.
1 2 7 9 14 3 5 2 1.
And that's the number of animals that she had to take care of as a shepherd girl.
See, that's just—it's just crazy that in this day and age, 2019, we should have someone who can only count to a number that she has animals to look after. It's crazy, right?
She then was barely in her teenage years where she was married off. Shortly thereafter, she became a mother, and she's now in her 30s with three children. She's finally getting a chance through this new venture developed by Partnership Afghanistan and Canada, or PAC, in collaboration with the University of British Columbia and World Vision.
Listen, even those Hardy Dars are literate.
They just count it to 42.
I know.
So they're daily pre-recorded phone calls. They deliver a set of sessions teaching reading and writing skills in Dari, which is a Persian dialect and one of Afghanistan's main languages. All they need is a pen, some paper, and a textbook for learning the alphabet and obviously the phone.
It is an indisputable truth that if you free women from this prison kind of situation where they belong to men and men get to decide their future and men decide whether they're going to get pregnant or not and they can't read and they can't write, the minute you free women from that situation, everything in society gets better.
It all changes.
Indisputable. Yeah. I mean, it's guaranteed to be the single fastest way to emancipate a population.
Yeah.
And if Afghanistan can get ahead by doing this, good. Thank goodness.
That's
need
really
all
cool.
the help they can get. And really, you know, I feel for these people in Afghanistan because they've been subject to the awful Taliban for the longest time and all kinds of other horrible stuff. Mm. Now they should be allowed to read. I mean, think about that. Just to be allowed to be able to read.
Well, there's a very popular TV series, The Handmaid's Tale, where they live in a... It's obviously sci-fi, but...
That's not the story of how you grew up in the south of Joburg.
No, definitely not.
Huh? Oh, I thought it was. That's why I didn't watch it.
And even though it's, you know, it's not a true story, it is true in so many ways. Because this exists. These women there are not allowed to read. In the shopping centers, they don't have labels on the tins. They've just got a picture of what's inside.
Oh, wow.
Because you're just not allowed to read. And that's what it's like, essentially, in places like Afghanistan.
All right. Well, hopefully there'll be more good news for you tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday, and we're here to look after you from early in the morning, 6 o'clock on. Here's the un-news to wrap it up for today. The South African stock market is experiencing an unexpected boom this year. First 6 months of the year have defied the failing economy and produced pleasing returns for investors. Utterly surprised by this, Cyril Ramaphosa, who's surprised by everything, is now looking to create fresh taxes around this in an attempt to milk profits which have dried up elsewhere. Speaking of tax, government is looking to implement a new wealth tax. The joke is on them, however, as the only rich people left in South Africa are those that live large on the taxpayers' dimes. Good luck. Finally, India showed very little interest in beating England yesterday in an attempt to eliminate Pakistan from the World Cup. When asked about this after the match, Indian captain Virat Kohli said it was in everyone's best interest for England to progress to the semis and not Pakistan. This wasn't match fixing, but rather match arranging, something that is totally fine as long as India, and only India, do it. We shall see you tomorrow. 6 o'clock bright and early. Be good. Keep it on cliffcentral.com. You know how it goes from there. Blah, 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 blah.
This is cliffcentral.com.